Hello and welcome to the What's Cooking podcast. This is our Adjusting With mini-series where we're chatting to some of our past guests to hear updates on how their businesses are going and highlight any new initiatives that they might be working on at the moment. They'll be talking us through how they're adapting to challenges and generally keeping going during this time.
If you want to find out more about these guests that we're chatting to, and we definitely recommend you do that, you can scroll back through our archive and find whole episodes with these guests. You can learn about their businesses and what they're about. We really hope you enjoy these mini episodes and that you find some kind of comfort or inspiration in what they have to say. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Hi. How are you?
I'm okay, doing well. I think I was mentally drained because there was whole fear of, the unknown. I think that you've that you need to take control in terms of switching off the news. If you're forever watching the news, then you're in that kind of bubble. So I think it's important to have a structure and then figure out a way. With that, you need to be talking to your peers. I've got lots of friends in the tech valley. I don't follow really the government data so much. I'm looking at sort of like worldwide data and looking at trends and then kind of making my own assessments in the 6 months. So realistically, I was like, in the realist in me was thinking I was going to blow over in 3 months or 4 months. And now in the last month, it's like, if I need the business to succeed, I've got people to pay, staff to pay, I need to think of something a bit more strategic. And I applaud the restaurants and cafes that have been able to quickly adapt and create a takeaway and delivery service. We don't want to do that with our brand because we're not a restaurant. We're not a cafe. So we still want to be offering something quite unique and true to our brand. And so we came with a concept called social bubbling, which is people, I've started creating my own bubbles now of people who also live on their own, have been virus free, some got it, some haven't got it. We're starting to meet once a week for dinner. We don't hug or kiss or embrace, but we sit on the same dinner and eat. And I remember having our first dinner, actually, just getting so emotional that eating around a table of food with other people in it was just such a visceral emotive experience, and realizing that yes, we're all getting food delivered to our houses in plastic boxes, but it's important to create that social interaction again, because a lot of us can't meet our parents because we have to be responsible, but we can pick and choose one or two friends. And I just put a little note out on Instagram today, and clients have called me up and saying, well, I've got a whole family on lockdown together, so can we start doing this thing? And so creating a fun name, because I think the trends are that even restaurants will have this kind of social bubble concept where a few people can sit together. I've already heard some of the bigger chains are creating booths now so that people can be taken responsibly into booths, because I think that's the only way these restaurants will be allowed to be opened. So based on that concept, I have a weekly call with a couple of, there's a couple of Michelin star chefs on there from New York or London. Some of them are private chefs and some of them have own larger chains. So seeing what their thought process is and we just exchange ideas, that's been really, really useful. And we also talk on a very personal level, about what we're going through, what we're struggling with, and it's important to be heard. It's an important to, hear people out. That's all we need to do. There's a lot of comparatives going on, like people, you've got married people with kids who say, you're lucky, you're on your own, you haven't got kids. And that's quite hurtful to a lot of people who are men and women, because each one poses different issues. And I think the biggest thing I've realized is that when I have a weekly call with my friends who are in the Middle East and Australia, we try and find a time that works out. And we just sit there and see, you know, what's the thing that you're struggling with and really help one another. So while I was nursing this virus, I have a lot of friends who don't know how to cook. So I was creating WhatsApp shopping lists. And you know, we all had to budget for the, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have to make sure that your staff are all being looked after. Most of our staff have gone on to work for local organizations. We were still getting produce. We'd still book produce, you know, way in advance. So we didn't want to stop that because we're supporting smaller farms and small suppliers. So converting that food into food for the homeless and the vulnerable. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who don't even know where their next day meal is going to come from. So that's what I could do from my couch. Try and donate some funds, even if it's a small amount, it was going a long way. What else was I doing? So that was my immediate need, to make sure that we didn't waste any food. But also there's a lot of privileged people out there who, and they were the ones who were hoarding all the food in the initial weeks. And we went around on the day of the bins being collected, and were literally fishing out potatoes and spinach and salad and carrots and bread from people's recycling bins, fully sealed. And the use-by date hadn't gone off. And so I think that made me really angry. I've been angry for a long time, for the last couple of weeks, because whilst you see all the kindness, you've also seen people misbehaving so badly. You know, it's kind of that me, myself, and I culture. And that's been quite surprising to see that, you know, we're all in the same boat, whether you're, you know, in a small business or a medium business, we're all stuck at home. And our immediate need is to feed ourselves. But it's been interesting to see how people have responded. I have a client of mine who is no longer a client now, who actually called me so I could make them avocado and crumble feta on a sourdough bread, and wanted me to come every day and make that. So I sent a YouTube link teaching them how to do it, because people just aren't used to making breakfast, lunch or dinner. And so I was very, and they were just calling me, wanting to pay something so ridiculous to come and cook and toast pieces of bread. And I just kind of lost it. Like, in this, you know, it's all very well owning the largest company in Europe in XYZ, but if you can't even toast a piece of bread and put some avocado on it, maybe you need to learn these skills. So I don't know, that's kind of been my experience about looking at human behavior. And our business is about human sort of interaction. So how, you know, how is it going to look in the next couple of months? And it is that people are dying to be together with their family, right? You know, as I said just before lockdown, we had this my parents' 50th wedding anniversary that I'd been organizing for months. And I've organized so many events. And I didn't want it to, I've seen so many elaborate events. I wanted it to be low key. I wanted to be reflective of, you know, my parents' personalities. And I really wanted it to be a lovely, there was so much food, you know, there was canapes, there was a huge mezze table, there was like a Persian feast, and there was a dessert table. It just went on and on and on. And so I now know that people still want to celebrate even more so now. A lot of people have lost loved ones, so they want to have a memorial, so once their family can get together, because it's a way of closure and healing. So I've had two bookings today, which is memorials for June for two people who passed away from COVID. And it's still important to come together through food and to grieve and to mourn. And so, you know, how do we do that responsibly? And how do we do it in a way where it's a bit more, there's a bit more emotion behind it? It's not just a transaction. I mean, for my business, it's never been a transactional thing. But how can we do it in a way where it's really creating food that's sharing, and also helps with that healing, but also helps people bring people together? So yeah, that's kind of what's going on in my head right now. So
Yeah, I think you're right. That's, you know, well, you said so many interesting things there, but, you know, I think this really has, one, brought out the best and the worst of society. And yeah, there's been so many heartwarming examples of things, and then there's been so many really frustrating things going on. And but yeah, I also think with the, you know, the connection side of things, that's the universal feeling, is that people just want to spend time with people. And then, you know, as we always say, food is the universal connector, and it brings so much joy, and it really is kind of a vehicle for those occasions. So with the social bubble, is it social bubble you're calling it?
I call it social. It was going to be social bubble dining, but it was too long, so we're going to slang word, because the lady who does my PR is quite cool, so she goes, we're going to call it social bubbling. And we mentioned it a few times on the phone call, and people like that because it's social, and it's like this, it's, you know, and I haven't, we're just putting changes to our website. I don't want to mention the two C's, Corona or COVID. I don't want to put sort of any attention to the lockdown. I want to sort of put down like, that we want to do it responsibly, but in the same house or kitchen way. I'm allergic to white plates and boxes, plastic boxes. So that's been quite, how do we deliver? You know, so we came up with a couple of concepts. So we've got like a date night bubble, we've got a guy that's trying to propose to his girlfriend. He was trying to propose to her in March, so we had to hold the thing. So he's got this, and his partner is a key worker. So we got in touch with him today. So we're going to organise a little mini proposal. And that's going to be like a mezze dinner where we go into their garden and he'll bring her down. And the fact that she's a key worker is just, it's really, really special. And so we've got that one. Then we've also got garden parties where people are doing social distance partying, where they've got a side entrance to their garden. So they can call more people in. But they've just got to eat more responsibly, so we can set up a beautiful table with like flowers and lovely colourful dishes. That's more for like a bigger one. And then also we've got some of the families that live around this area have been locked down together, like grandparents and couples with their children. So there's about like maybe 8 to 12 people in their household. So we'll come in with a huge box. Some of them are okay for us to go in their kitchen, set everything up, and then leave and then come back and pick up the dishes. But the idea is that we will supply the cutlery, napkins, and so you are having everything, like the chicken will be taken out and put onto a platter and given to you. So it's more of a special feeling. We don't really put things in a foil container or a plastic box. So that's going to be, that makes the feeling more unique and special. That's what our hope is. So we've booked a few things today, and then we've got like we've got Dana, we've got Sunday roast bubble, so they're gonna be called bubble boxes. And the Sunday roast is that this is what people are really missing from their families. We've had loads of couples and people on their own, or if you've got a bunch of 4 or 5 people living in a flat who really want to have a Sunday roast, and a lot of restaurants aren't doing that. So like a leg of lamb, you know, either Mediterranean or Persian with some beautiful sides and salads. And so we've just been listening to what people wanted, because that's really important as well. You can't just be, we're seeing a lot of businesses who are just doing what they think clients want, but you know, you have to listen to your local community and see the demographic and see the trends and, you know, what kind of foods they want. Our crowd here, they're not sort of North London, Central London crowd, wants something organic, wants something pretty, something embellished really nicely, because people are saying we're really tired of eating out of a plastic box. And that's no disrespect to the other companies, but I think, you know, people are now getting, they're missing going out. So how can they have that feeling of going out at home? So we're doing like the date night one is like dress up and we'll come and dress your table, because that's, people are so used to living in pajamas and yoga pants and loungewear now that people don't dress up for dinner. No one, even your own dinner on your dining table. So it's bringing that kind of basic love back into food, because we've been in survival mode for about 2 months now. And it's like, now things have got to change. Like, the restaurants aren't going to open anytime soon. The restaurant needs to come to us in that format. So that's our idea. And we just emailed all our existing clients. And so they've been really, really happy. But the other sad thing about this, lots of things have been cancelled, right? Lots of weddings have been cancelled. I do only small weddings anyway. And some of the people, you know, I don't know who follows me on Instagram. I never look. You know, people have been watching. And then I had a client who was getting married in August. And what they've done is they contacted a charity that they saw that I was supporting. And they contacted them to ask, like, what does the Hamster Kitchen really do? And he said, well, you know, they don't share a lot on it on social media, and they don't like us telling a lot, but this is what they do. And based on that, they said that we've decided that we're going to have a Zoom wedding, and we're going to have a little get together in the garden with just family and friends. But we'd like to donate whatever we've put towards the, because they pay the invoice in full, but can you donate the cost of that to your, to any charitable cause, you know? So that's been really good. You know, our clients haven't asked for refunds because they realize we're a small niche business. If I start having to give refunds, our business is not going to be very liquid. And then once this is over, we won't be able to support, you know, the business. So people have to understand the whole chain, you know, like we understand the chain of our suppliers and the people we work with, because if we don't buy from them, even though we don't have the clients right now, they'll go out of business. So it's kind of like karma, but there are a lot of people who don't understand. I had one client who was fairly affluent who kept badgering me to get a refund. And I kept saying, well, I don't feel obliged to give you a refund. I think let's just press pause and postpone your party or find another way. But I'm not saying I'm not going to give you the money. I'm just saying, can we just pause? And there are people who aren't very understanding. They don't really, you know, have a lot of sympathy for small businesses, which is really hard. And yeah, so that's been really interesting to kind of see, again, going back to seeing the worst and the best out of people. So yeah.
And what other ways have you been able to support the charities that you support with your work and through cooking as well?
Okay, so I mean, I was very fair. I mean, even though I got the all clear, I didn't really want to go out and physically cook. So people that way, so we hire a lot of freelancers. So we, so the people that we were still paying on our books, they decided to either put into distribution, distributing food, going and making food. And some of these organizations are so small, they don't even have a social media presence. It's the smaller ones where if you donate £500, it goes such a long, long way. And whilst, you know, the NHS fund is, you know, humongous, you know, like Tom Moore raising 30 million, that's great. But it's that money's being parked for future projects. It's not really helping anybody real time now. So like, you know, part of our kitchen was supporting food to our local hospital, our local GP, because these guys are working round the clock doing sort of, you know, my personal doctor came and checked up on me. I'm in full gear because I was too ill to go. And he said, don't go to a hospital. I'll come and see you. You know, someone like that hasn't got time to then go to the shops and go and cook. So I was still cooking for myself because I don't really do take out food, because when you're sick, that's not really going to heal you. So I would make something extra and then give him a box and, you know, give it to him. But there's three or four ways of donating, right? So you can either, people need funds so that they can actually supply food. And then initially people were hoarding on to tinned food like tuna and chickpeas and pasta. All the dried stuff was very hard to get, things like eggs and things like bread. So working with our suppliers to try and get that, you know, there's so much hidden poverty, even in an affluent area of Hampstead. You know, it's you know, people are mortgaged to the hill. People barely have even 3 weeks of savings. So, but people don't talk about it, but you hear about it. You'll see there's like makeshift pantries where we were delivering food to. And in the night you would see people in very, very nice looking cars picking up basic stuff. That has been quite shocking. People wasting food, and we still go around, you know, taking waste. You know, there's a massive organizations like City Harvest, Felix, and Nishkam Swat, who deliver food. You know, they're much, much bigger scale. So it's about looking at the resources that we have, both in terms of our suppliers, food, also cash. Cash is very low for a lot of charities right now. Whilst the government has all these schemes, you know, it's usually the medium size and the bigger companies who are getting access to that money. The smaller charities and companies are barely getting the funds. So even giving £100 here, £200 here, £300 here goes a long way to supporting key people. Then we have a lot of elderly people in our area who live alone, whose kids live abroad, just making them a roast chicken and giving them a tin of chickpeas so they can actually create, like, you know, 4 to 8 meals if they're on their own. And it's just a simple chicken, but, you know, nobody is going to be able to afford to go and get a full chicken and make a meal. So that's quite easy for us to do. So we have 3 kitchens. We've now reduced it to 1 kitchen because we had to just kind of make sure that staff was being looked after. Some of my staff are very vulnerable. So we're not talking about front of office staff, but the staff who have 3 or 4 jobs. Some of them are Uber drivers. Some of them work in cash and carry. They need that income in order to be able to look after their family. So how does that translate to some of my affluent friends? So by telling that story, I would say that I reduced my food budget. You know, I'm not a person who spends a lot of money anyway, but I created a WhatsApp group with my friends and gave like a WhatsApp shopping list. I would tell them what food to make. I had friends who were spending, because they were food was the only comfort you had. You can't meet your friends, you can't meet your family, you're stuck at home. So people were buying, they were snacking and just getting lots of takeout. And a couple of my friends had racked up a bill of like £150 to £200 a week. So I was like, this is ridiculous, and came up with this really simple list. And it's the same list that I buy every week. I have the same list. I don't veer off it. And it's become like a uniform. For me, food has become like fuel. There's no kind of, I don't look at it as an enjoyment or a luxury thing, because I see that if I can stick to a budget, one, I can support my staff, but also I can donate more. And that's what I'm encouraging my staff to do, and my friends as well. Like our food bill has gone down considerably, and that whole thing of using up your leftovers or sharing food with your neighbors is so, so important. Like, not a crumb goes in the bin. So that's been interesting to sort of implement and help friends do that, because I had quite a lot of friends in New York. The other key thing that we started doing was, it's the month of Ramadan, so we're fasting right now. And Ramadan is all very cultural. You break your fast together. It's about your mum's cooking and your mum is sending you food. There's none of that going on. So it's about, how do we create a meal that's kind of going to, and they're quite long. They start at 3 o'clock in the morning and they finish at 8:30 at night. So how can you create a sustenance meal? So Islamic Relief, which is one of the biggest kind of Muslim charities out there, quite global company, they asked me to come up with 2 recipes. One was like a roast chicken with potatoes that an idiot could cook. It was so simple, but it was cheap. And it's a kind of food that is so basic that I've cooked in refugee camps, I've cooked for the homeless, I've cooked for various vulnerable people here. It's so basic, has less ingredients. And then one was like a chickpea and carrot kind of soupy stew, like if you're a vegan or vegetarian. And so many people, I mean, that's the first time I've actually done a video on Instagram. And I do not, like, if you look on my Instagram, I'm not about promoting myself. It's more, I talk more we as the Hamster Kitchen rather than Simon. at the Hampstead Kitchen. So they wanted me to do a talking video, and I was like, oh, whatever. It was like the first day after so many weeks that I put makeup on, I'm like, okay, this is as good as it's going to get. And I've got all this gray hair thing going on, and it's okay, it's fine. And so I did this video, and then a lot of people got to see who I was very natural, and it responded really, really well. And so many people reached out, asking for more recipe, more tips. And I didn't want to formalize it by doing something more constructive on Instagram stories. I thought it was much more beneficial to connect to people on a one-on-one basis. There's a lot of people going through a lot of emotional stuff. So it was love. It was kind of like healing through food. Like, oh, I've got a can of cannelloni beans, what should I do? And I said, get some tomatoes and do that. So it wasn't more for sharing to the wider audience. It was kind of making really meaningful connections. And I got some guy was looking at what I was doing on the Islamic Relief, an English guy who runs a reputable company. And he said, so what are you going to do in your business? And I said, don't even ask. I haven't even thought that far. I've got this much money sitting in my bank account. I know I can survive until August. I'll wake up in August and think about it, because I didn't have the mental capacity, right? Then you're looking on Instagram and seeing that people are doing this, that, and the other, and you're having like, not FOMO, but you're feeling the pressure. Oh my God, I need to be doing something with my business. We can't have parties. We can't do private events in people's homes. But you can only think when your mind is clear, and just giving that time off and just realizing that you're not mentally in a shape. You know, you fix all the leaky holes, right? You fix everybody, but now you've got to kind of be, in order to do something really, really long-term and strategic, you need to be fully engaged. And so I did a pitch to him about my business idea. It was just like a skeleton version, and he put the meat on the bones. And that's when he gave me the confidence. And we started chatting every day just for about 10 minutes. And he just, he works with some of the biggest companies around the world. I'm like, why did you choose me? He goes, because you were just being honest about how hard this was. And we were on a webinar, and everybody was trying to give the most. I mean, you've interviewed me before. I don't have a structure. And so I think people just connect on a real time basis, you know, without all the kind of BS and the sort of smart answers. Like, really, it's that I really don't feel that inspired to do anything right now. I just think, what's the point? If I get food, I've got a roof over my head, I'm quite comfortable, because I see that there's lots of people struggling. So I think I'm the richest person in the world. Because I've got two eggs and a little bit of Gruyere cheese and a little leftover potatoes, so I can make frittatas, and that in itself is making me happy. So it's nice. I've enjoyed connecting with people on Zoom, but having like a one-on-one conversation with them where I've asked them like, how are you? And it's not being that, oh, I'm okay. But it's like, no, life is pretty crap. I'm like, yep, it is. And I'm like, what are you struggling with? And he goes, well, I have a kid who, I mean, I've got a lovely family, but I've got a kid who just follows me everywhere. I can't even get to the toilet on my own. I just need 5 minutes to myself. And I said, but you're so lucky that I know I'm lucky. All of that is true, but I just want 5 minutes to myself. So it was quite nice to be real with one another, I think, you know.
I'm so happy that you're kind of able to continue for the integrity of your business, really, and you saying that your staff are your first and foremost concern. I'm happy that you've found this way of moving forward, which sounds lovely, and it does sound like something people would love to do.
And also, because I'm doing all the changes on my website today, and it's like, I had to look at the whole of my website, and it's quite formal about what we do in the events and how we present things. And I kind of thought, okay, let's just put that to one side. Let's just talk about where we are right now. what is I really need and connect on a human level. Like, we all miss our families. Let's get together in a responsible way. Let's make this work and be optimistic that this is gonna, you know, as months progress, it'll just get better and better and better, right? I mean, we've just had VE Day. You know, think about it. There was a war going on for 6 years. Kids were separated from their parents. 6 years, and people have lost the plot in 2 months. You know, they've really lost the plot. You know, technology's been great, connecting with family. I've done cook-alongs with my nephew. He goes out and chooses a recipe. I've cooked the most... I don't cook like that ever. Like, you know, we cooked crispy, sticky thigh chicken that had all sorts of sauces, and I do not use sauces. I'm like, go with it. And he was like putting the rice in the restaurant style, and he cooked for his whole family that day because, you know, he was getting fed up. And so he loves food. And so what can you do, which is fun? So the cook-along thing was really, really fun. Then my niece said, I want to cook chocolate fudge brownies. And I'm like, I'd rather get Liz to deliver than cook chocolate fudge brownies. Then we had to do that. So, you know, it's just fun things. And it kind of lifts up your spirit that food is just, it's so basic. But right now, it's all that anyone's focused on. I mean, right now, supermarket is the new going out, right? So I had to do an Instagram takeover for this company called Amalia, which is a group of really progressive Muslim women from all around the world. Some are creative, some are amazing founders and entrepreneurs. And I did an Instagram takeover. And usually in the media, to represent a Muslim woman, you know, she's wearing hijab. And so, you know, I want to show the different types of sort of, and I'm British Muslim. So I just thought, okay, I'm going to wear tight leather leggings with the most amazing boots. And I walked to the supermarket. I went to the supermarket and I was standing in the queue thinking, there's people in pajamas. I'm a bit too overdressed. I thought, well, this is the only chance I get to dress up. So it doesn't matter. I like took out my handbag, got my jewelry on, and just was strutting. And everybody in the supermarket was looking at me thinking, you're not going, do you think you're in a club or something? But I was laughing to myself thinking, the supermarket isn't you going out. That's, you know, it's literally, you know, it's the only way, only place you dress up. So it's about looking at the comical value out of it. I mean, you know, which is quite funny. So I showed a picture of my leather leggings and people were just laughing their pants off. It was quite funny. Yeah.
Supermarket chic.
Oh yeah, it's a new thing actually. I've been listening to quite a lot of podcasts, and you know, women are missing putting their makeup. And just before I went into lockdown, this last meeting I went to, so there's all this thing about traceability. We found that the meeting that I went to, this guy had come from Singapore, and basically anybody who was sitting around him basically got COVID. And luckily we got like a middle strain of it where none of us ended up in hospital, but ours dragged on for a lot longer. So there's so many different, and then three of us, there were 8 people who were infected, and 3 of us were still hadn't healed, that we got it again. So it's really interesting to know. But the whole thing about this whole business meeting was, I'd bought myself this stunning dress from this store, and I had this lovely jacket on, and I just bought masses of makeup. And I thought, I only got to wear it once. Like, what the hell? So now I've been trying to cheer myself up and put makeup on. And I think it's important because you need a game face on, literally, like even clothes. Because it just gets you, you know, gets you in the mood of work mode.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't feel good if I'd stayed in pajamas all day. I mean, I know that some people do. I've got friends who work from home in their dressing gowns and they love it, but I couldn't do that.
What's the other thing I was going to talk about? Yeah, I think I've covered the main points. I mean, I think from a business perspective, I think that it's going to be, I mean, it's still going to be evolving and changing, especially depending on the government and also what the need is from your clientele. And then right now, I mean, I've got a sister-in-law who's a baker, and, you know, people are treating themselves to a cake or a box of brownies, and obviously you'll find that. So it's about also adjusting, because our price point is obviously very, very high. And it's like making sure that our brand is true and that we don't get compared to something a bit more low end. You want to maintain that level of, I don't like the word luxury or bespoke, the level that people have been used to, but still do it in a responsible way. That is quite challenging, because I remember I was asking about stickers. I looked at so many different options, but in the end, it's creating so much waste. You know, there's so much, you know, whilst the air is a lot cleaner, the actual recycling bins are riddled with a lot of plastic. It's the same plastic where you get the takeaway food. And so, you know, we're solving one issue, but we're creating another one. So there's always an offset to the current situation. So that's when I thought, no, I can't do that. I can't have food with the expensive packaging, which is still going to end up in the bin. It can't be reused. It's not safe. So yeah, that didn't wash with me. And obviously we'd have to upfront spend a lot of money, and I wasn't prepared to spend money on something that was going to go in the bin. You know, even with some of the leg of lamb and chicken we're going to do, we're just going to open up our Jeep, and it's going to be in a thermobox, and then we'll take it out fresh and put it on a dish and actually present it in front of the, you know, client like that, because they'll be ready to eat. So we don't want to cling anything or foil anything. So our sort of Jeeps or SUVs will convert into like mini prep stations in a way, to make sure that it's a really interesting experience. But getting through all of that has been quite hard and challenging, actually. How do you maximize? Because now we're not into volume. We now have to think of doing volume, because our price point is going to be slightly lower, right? That for me was a hard thing, to change my mindset, because I didn't want to do that. But there is a demand in my area. Do I ignore that demand because I'm not comfortable with the idea? Or do I get off my high horse and think, okay, there's a demand, I can do this, so I have to do this. So that's been the toughest thing. And I think a lot of people are struggling with that, that I've been speaking to, that they're still not, and I'm like, this is what I want to do, this makes sense. And they're trialing it out and it's not working, because they're not listening. They're the people who are just panicking and coming up with short-term solutions. Or generally like so-and-so is doing this, so this is going to work for my model. I don't think, just because they've got a different business model, it's not necessarily going to translate with your business. So yeah. Sometimes I've had to shut off Instagram and think, okay, what are we known for? What do we already deliver to our customers, and how can we do that in the current climate? And I've just been kind of in my little makeshift office. I've just been putting, you know, I couldn't do it on a computer. I literally went to bed, pen and paper. And when I saw it visually, then it came to me. Mm. Tech is great, but you need to write it out and see how it's going to look. And then, you know, using my sort of project skills, thinking, okay, if I was a project right now, you know, there's feelings and emotions, right? When you're survival mode, your fears get in the way of it. You can't think so strategically. The future. You've got to think right here, right now, which is great because you need to survive, but you can't have something that's going to be obsolete in 2 months' time and things change, either for the better or the worse. Like, God forbid, if there's a peak, then we'll have to scale it back. So you're looking at all these kind of yes and no scenarios and thinking, what I'm proposing, can it be adapted if this happens? Can it be expanded if this happens? And then you know that you're onto something that's going to have longevity. Going on meaningful webinars, actually speaking to founders who are in the same boat as I am, has been really helpful, because it's actually helped them in a different way, but it's also, I've benefited a lot from it as well.
Yeah, I think the whole time you've been talking to us, I've been thinking exactly what you've just said, that what you've come up with is something that it's not a short-term solution. It's so in line with your ethos, and it, you know, it just sounds like whatever happens, it'll be adaptable, but it's something that, you know, I think people's behavior is going to change for a long time. And but yeah, as we've been saying, you know, people want connection. There are occasions where people will want something like this. And so I think it's really great that you've stepped back and actually thought about something that isn't just a quick fix. It's something that for your business can really carry through for however long things are different.
I mean, all of us have invested so much time, energy in our businesses, right? And we've never faced anything like this before. Okay, when you're a business person, cash flow is always difficult to predict because you have the high season, then you have the low season, right? So I think then having and then we're all in a situation where we're all in the same boat. This has never happened to, when has it happened in your lifetime that we're all in the same boat as in business? So that also should give people confidence that, you know, you've made such an investment. You can't, some people have become really defeatist and think they can't see a way out, which is really sad. They think that that's it. This is how my business was. And not be adaptable. And I've learned from that, okay, this is like my baby, you know, and it needs a little bit more extra love and attention. So how do you do that? That's been challenging, of course. But we've all invested so much time, energy and money in our businesses. And, you know, we don't want them to, you know, there are sadly so many businesses that I've seen on the high street where they've told me that there's no way that they can see themselves reopening. That's been really sad to see and hear. And that's made me work harder, because I have an opportunity where if I push myself, I can somehow get through it, you know, because some people don't even have that option. And I'm in a position of a little bit privilege where I have a really solid business, and, you know, it makes me work harder when I see that other people are struggling, to not take it for, to not be complacent and not take it for granted. That's kind of the situation. And being in a state of gratitude, you know, seeing what I have and what can I use. And so, yeah, my skill set is that I can make something out of nothing. You know, even as a chef, the last thing, I've never cooked so much for myself ever in so many years. And suddenly, you know, it's the best time of my day when I sit there and think, oh, I've got two carrots, oh, I've got a half avocado, what can I make? And then I have a little bit of leftover, you know, chicken soup, and I end up making a stew, and then feeling quite content in myself that I spent zero money today and I created lunch and dinner out of things that were lying around in my salad drawer. I think that's the highlight. It sounds really sad. So that I have friends telling me what's in their drawers, and I'm like, well, you can do this and this and this. You just need to put, you need chickpeas and you can do this. Or I had a New York charity get in touch with me and said, they're creating boxes for some of these vulnerable families. Could I come up with some recipes? They're not on social media, but through friends of a friend have heard about me. And I'm like, sure. So there's nothing we can give you in return. I'm like, I don't want anything in return. So I came up with a recipe of like a lemony, citrusy kind of tuna patties, you know, that can be made with leftover stale bread, made into breadcrumbs, a little bit of cheddar cheese, and some, tuna in a can. You know, you can have it either with salad, you can have it in a burger, you can have it, you know, on its own. So it's creating something versatile. So I love that random people somehow will just call me up and say, you know, this is what we're doing. Could you supply a recipe? And I like that I don't want anything in return. I see that as a blessing. I don't think that's amazing, but I just think, thank God I'm not doing things with an agenda. And I keep checking in with myself, because I mean, I see so much rubbish on Instagram, and I think, I don't want to be like that. I want to be authentic. So I work extra hard to say, no, you've got to be in a state of giving, because it has to give in some other form, karma in another way to you back. So I want to, this is the reason why I want to say that, because I want to encourage other people, like, have no agenda and help one another out, even if it's just giving somebody some financial advice, say, or personal advice, anything, you know, do it with heart.
Slowing down, really. I've really enjoyed just slowing down, and I always find I feel really guilty. Before this all happened, I had a lot of guilt where I was like, if I'm not working all the time, I feel really guilty. And I've really enjoyed just slowing down and taking pleasure and doing nothing. It's been really nice.
It's funny how we feel guilty, but, you know, sometimes how can you be productive all the time? I think sometimes my hope is that once we come out of this, start to come out of it, that we're very mindful of who we meet. I'm already hearing people are being, you know, it's the same people you think of in the forefront of your mind, like that list of friends becomes smaller and smaller. But also, you know, so I was putting so much pressure on myself, I've got to do this, and this. I couldn't, the more pressure I was doing and the more guilty I was feeling, I couldn't be productive. So just sitting back and realizing that it's okay to just sit still. And, you know, I've never had a diary where there's nothing in my diary. You can't go out to a gym class, you can't go meet friends, you can't cook for your clients, you can't meet up with family. There's nothing to do except go to the supermarket. So that's the highlight of my, you know, my week. But I now don't do a weekly shop. I just go, I don't want to go shopping every day, because that's where I caught the virus again, in a small supermarket. So I go once every 2 weeks. So that thing about guilt, I've heard that from so many people. I've heard people who are comfortable, who have food and money, they feel a lot of guilt. So I say, well, don't feel guilty. Why don't you donate funds or cook for somebody or cook for the... And I think then that starts to kind of balance out a bit better.
Yeah.
You know, that giving, whether it's giving of time to somebody, giving in money, or cooking for somebody who doesn't know how to cook, you know, that then you don't feel so guilty,
I think. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. There's a lot of ways everyone can help someone, even if it's not with money. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just encouraging people, like, how can we do that? I don't want to come all preachy. I don't want to do that on Instagram. So I think initially I was talking about who's a hero. You know, it was all the individual little people rather than a huge organization, about people who were just going over and beyond, really. Mm-hmm. I hope we all get to meet in happier times. You know, who would have thought that sitting around the table, that wouldn't happen? I think you could cope with COVID if we could all meet up around food. That's the biggest thing, and it's come down to the bare basic of food and connection and human touch. And that's what my hope is, and that's why I think my model will hopefully expand and do well, because people will come back to those simple values of coming together and eating. And I think people won't be, I think in the next 6 months, people won't be that keen to go out to restaurants, even if they start to open up. I think there'll be more things going on indoors. People will be ordering cakes and desserts and treats and having more get-togethers at home.
Oh, well, Simon, it's been so, so lovely to chat.
No worries. And if there's anything I can do or say or help with, please just reach out. I really mean that. But keep safe and keep well, and hopefully
and you
in London, and we get together soon in happier circumstances.
Definitely. And
we can eat. Yeah, definitely. I'm still breathing, still need to eat my food. Take care.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.